Have you ever wondered why the same event can be described in completely different ways? After the September 11th attacks, a $3.5 billion insurance dispute hinged on whether the tragedy constituted one event or two. This semantic battle wasn't merely academic. It revealed something profound about how human minds organize reality. When we frame events differently, we aren't just playing word games, we're activating entirely different mental models that shape how we perceive the world. Our everyday speech, from casual conversations to legal disputes to profanity, unveils the hidden architecture of human thought. Language doesn't just express our thoughts, it provides a window into how our minds carve continuous reality into discrete conceptual units. The 9/11 insurance dispute perfectly illustrates how we actively organize reality through mental frameworks. Some define the events physically, two tower collapses, while others define them by human intentions, one terrorist plot. Neither perspective was factually wrong. They simply represented different ways of mentally packaging reality. We treat events remarkably like objects. They can be counted, divided, and relocated. We say the meeting was moved forward just as naturally as the car was moved forward, revealing how deeply our understanding of time borrows from our understanding of space. This framing power fuels creativity, humor, and social discourse. It's what allows us to see the same glass as half empty or half full. But it also fuels political disputes, where competing descriptions battle for legitimacy. When Republicans frame taxes as confiscations, while Democrats describe them as membership fees, they're activating entirely different mental models that shape how people perceive reality. Words absorb emotional coloring beyond their literal meanings. As Bertrand Russell noted, "I am firm, you are obstinate, he is pig-headed." The same quality receives different labels based on our relationship to the person. This emotional saturation appears most vividly in profanity, where unpleasant events trigger references to sexuality, excretion, or religion, a puzzling phenomenon emerging from ancient brain systems while conforming to modern language patterns. Linguistic taboos persist despite their illogic. The same government that punished George Carlin for banned words passed the Broadcast Decency Enforcement Act the same day Vice President Cheney used profanity in the Senate. Even those questioning these taboos typically respect some word boundaries, suggesting word magic is fundamental to human psychology rather than mere censorship. Children's language acquisition reveals hidden cognitive processes. From finite speech samples, they extract infinite generative rules. Their errors, like "all animals are wake-upped," demonstrate systematic language analysis, not mere imitation. Verbs present fascinating puzzles. Why can we say both "load hay onto the wagon" and "load the wagon with hay," but only "pour water into the glass"? Linguists recognized a conceptual shift. The content locative means A causes B to go to C, while the container locative means A causes C to change state by means of B. Is metaphor mere linguistic ornament or essential to thought itself? George Lakoff claims we think in metaphors grounded in physical experience rather than logical formulas, thus rejecting objective truth in favor of competing metaphors serving different purposes. However, people aren't trapped by metaphors. They can transcend them. Experimental psychologists have shown we don't access underlying conceptual metaphors when processing conventional expressions. We can question, discount, and analyze metaphors, even joke about them, as when Stephen Wright asks, "If all the world's a stage, where is the audience sitting?" Beneath metaphors lie abstract conceptual skeletons, concepts like thing, path, goal, and force that maintain connections to physical reasoning while functioning as abstract symbols. These concepts support inference across domains, allowing us to apply spatial reasoning to possession, time, or states. Metaphors derive their power from analogical structure, enabling sophisticated inferences like engineers solving paintbrush problems by reconceiving brushes as pumps. How do we read between the lines in conversation? Philosopher Paul Grice explained this through conversational implicature. When a reviewer writes that a performer produced a series of sounds that corresponded closely with the score, we understand it as criticism because the phrasing deliberately avoids the simpler sang. Politeness theory shows how people navigate social interactions through language. People worldwide maintain face, both positive face, desire for approval, and negative face, desire for autonomy. These reflect fundamental social dualities, solidarity slash status, connection slash autonomy, and intimacy, power. Game theory explains indirect speech during conflict or uncertainty. A driver contemplating bribing an officer faces different outcomes. A direct bribe creates a risky binary outcome, avoiding a ticket or arrest, while an indirect bribe offers a safer third option. A corrupt officer understands the implication, while an honest one lacks definitive proof. Why use transparent pretenses when everyone understands the real intention? By speaking indirectly, a speaker signals they're preserving the hearer's dignity. Articulating a relationship explicitly suggests it isn't truly communal, as genuine communal bonds are felt, not rationally decided. While participants understand an indirect proposition, eavesdroppers have only the actual words to interpret. The public relationship remains a pleasant illusion that survives an implied message but would collapse under a direct proposition. Words operate on multiple levels simultaneously. We constantly communicate indirectly, asking questions as requests, "Could you pass the guacamole?" offering veiled bribes, or delivering threats through euphemisms. These verbal charades allow us to navigate relationships without explicitly acknowledging power dynamics. Relationship types represent discrete modes of interaction, and switching between them requires joint recognition. A direct proposition clearly falls on one side of a boundary, while innuendo exists on a continuum. Even minimal plausibility of denial provides enough boundary to maintain the current relationship. This reveals how deeply perspective-taking is embedded in language. Even when describing physical actions, we frame events differently. English treats changing entities similarly to moving ones, conceptualizing states as locations in a metaphorical state space, demonstrating metaphor's pervasive role in everyday language. Our minds transform analog sensations into discrete objects and events, packaging experience into propositions about real and possible worlds. We distinguish individuals from categories, essences from properties, and substances from objects. Nouns reflect these distinctions through count nouns like pebble, bounded, innumerable objects, versus mass nouns like gravel, substances without clear boundaries. Spatial terms quantize space at points where causal events change dramatically. Whether a marble is in rather than on a hand corresponds to the curvature that prevents it from rolling off. These distinctions can be life-saving, as when confusion about whether someone fell on versus through ice delayed rescue workers. Our minds organize reality using concepts of substance, space, time, and causality. These concepts form the foundation of conscious experience and provide semantic content for major syntactic elements. Yet they present paradoxes at the frontiers of science, philosophy, and law, being digital where the world is analog, schematic where reality is rich. Language isn't just for communication, but a window into thought itself. By understanding how our words frame reality, we gain insight into human cognition. Semantic disputes aren't just about words, but about how our minds organize and make sense of the world.